This is Genoa.
And this is Yusuf.
And this is In Flight Entertainment.
How's everyone out there in podcast land? I hope everyone is enjoying Women's History Month, because I know we are going into all these lovely movies that highlight women directors, women actors, and, you know, women in production, period. So yeah, it's been a blast so far.
Yep. And today we're doing I'm Your Woman, not I Am Woman.
You want to tell the story or you want?
Yeah, because we, both Yusuf and I, went and watched two different movies with very similar titles. And it was all my fault, because when we agreed to a movie, we said the Amazon I'm Your Woman, and I went and watched Netflix I Am Woman, in very different stories. They both take place in the 70s, but one is a true story, and the one we're doing today is about a woman who is forced to go on the run after her husband betrays his partners, sending her and her baby on a dangerous journey. Mm-hmm. Whereas I Am Woman is about Helen Reddy and the woman that wrote the song I'm Woman, Hear Me Roar, and like everything that was happening in the 70s with women's liberation. And just side note for that movie, for me, it's a definitely sit on the sofa and watch it. It's a fantastic movie. And it's like so sad to think that legislation for equal rights for women and sex and everything was initially presented to Congress and the Senate back in the 70s, and it's only just passed the House in February and still has to be passed the Senate. So we are 40 years later and still fighting for that.
Yeah, America, you know, just a lot of embarrassing shit, y'all, as a country, we need to, like, yeah,
kind of right, so I watched I Am Woman, and then I went and watched I'm Your Woman, which stars Rachel Brosnahan. You may know her for Miss Maisel, Marsha Stephanie Blake, and Aaron Z. Keene.
Yeah, I go with that.
It's written by Julia Hart and directed by Julia Hart. And what was fascinating after watching I Am Woman and then watching I'm Your Woman is following a housewife, basically. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple things in the movie where she's like, well, I don't have a job. I don't have any money. My husband never let me drive. I don't know how to do anything without a man telling me what to do. And it's just so sad that that was the life of many women in the 1970s. And so that's what we were watching in this movie, crime drama.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm glad you connected these two movies. Like I said, I haven't seen I Am Woman yet, but I'm definitely going to watch it this week. So inadvertently, you watch two films, like you said, that, you know, that taps into that era. I guess it's kind of serendipitous a little bit on your end. You still having to watch these two movies. Yes, or psychic. I don't know. General has some powers we don't understand. So this film is directed by Julia Hart. The reason I bring her up is because she happened to have directed one of my favorite films, I think 2018 or 19, called Fast Color, about the story about three generations of Black women possessing, you know, powers that's inherited through their bloodline. I mean, it was, yeah, like I loved that movie. And so this is her, I think it's her follow-up movie after. Yeah, it's a follow-up movie, because Fast Color 2018 and this movie is 2020.
Yeah, she did a movie called Stargirl Between, but yes, I mean, this is basically a follow-up. Mm. And what was, you know, in Fast Color, because we did review that last year, I believe, during Women's History Month, that in that one you had these strong, powerful Black women. And in I'm Your Woman, there's definitely the juxtaposition of the white woman and the Black woman, where the white woman's sort of helpless and kept in the dark and just went along with what her husband told her. We eventually find out in the story that the Black woman was married to the same man that the white woman was, and she was more of a partner in that relationship and knew everything that her husband was doing, all the bad stuff. And like, as you get to know the two characters, the Black woman's very much take charge, I'm gonna go solve the problem, and the white woman's just sort of along for the ride.
Yeah, for her own survival, pretty much for the sake of survival, because like you were saying, like, she was a sheltered housewife that needed to know little information about like how she's living in this, you know, this house, you know, having these things and things like that. I mean, I think, well, she know of, but she don't really know. And I think what was interesting about this film is like, you only see the husband, like maybe the first 10 minutes of the movie, and you don't see him again throughout the, like,
yeah. And that's sort of part of the story, because he's really there just to initiate the story, in that you find out he works for a crime family, and he's going off to take care of another job, and he'll be back later tonight. And then he disappears, and she goes on the run.
Right, because and then further in the movie, we find out that she can't have kids. Like, she couldn't. They couldn't have children, I think.
Yeah, we find that out during the opening scene. A Bobby Gentry song is playing. If you don't know who Bobby Gentry is, she is a 70s country singer who probably wrote one of the best storytelling country songs of all time. I would definitely go check out, even if you don't like country, from a storytelling perspective. She's an amazing writer. But so Bobby Gentry's song's playing at the beginning, and we find out that she met a man, she married him, they can't have kids, and then one day he brings home a baby.
Right. Yeah. And so now we have our main character we're following that's just thrust upon a situation where, one, she has zero knowledge about motherhood, because, you know, she don't have kids, and all of a sudden, like, oh, here's a baby.
Right. She had accepted that she would never have kids, and then all of a sudden a baby shows up.
Right. Yeah, and now not only she have to kind of navigate what's going on in this world, but trying to be a mother and being like pretty much being a lioness, like protecting her baby cub, so to speak, that, you know, she inherits it the best way she know how. But the thing is, she don't have a lot of knowledge about, you know, survival. So,
yeah. So then over the next 2 hours, we basically see her hiding out by herself, just her and the baby. The first place she hides out is so Cal, who used to work for her husband, takes her to a neighborhood, is like, don't talk to anyone, because people are out to get you, because they're looking for your husband. And so she's in the neighborhood, her just and the baby, and she ends up talking to the neighbor. The bad guys find out. Cal comes and rescues her. Cal kills the bad guys, kills the neighbor, and then they go off to hide in the woods in a cabin. And that's where Jean, who's played by Miss Maisel, meets Terry, who is married to Cal and her family.
Right.
And that's where we see the juxtaposition between the strong black woman that's getting shit done and the sheltered white woman that's just going along for the ride.
Yeah. And like I said, trying to figure it out. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely, you know, well-crafted sequence, like, for instance, when you brought up the whole neighbor thing, you know, it sort of reminded me of how Tarantino set up like the slow burn of like a character in a scene in a situation that ultimately ends in just this spontaneous bloodbath. I kind of got that vibe. Well, I did get that vibe in this particular sequence. Because you think everything is cool, but kind of suspicious. And then all of a sudden it's like, bang, 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 bang. Which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, because the first time we meet the neighbor, it's sort of like an eerie, it's definitely like Tarantino or like a Stephen King type of feeling. Of like her standing at the door holding some flowers and just sort of staring in. It is definitely like creepy atmosphere to the neighbor.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because you think like, okay, is she part of it? Like, is she just doing recon and like that? Right. But
Or is she just the nosy neighbor?
Right. And another interesting thing as far as like how this particular story is being told, I always say, you know, as far as telling a story, there's like this restrictive narrative, and the restrictive narrative is you're seeing everything through the eyes of the main character throughout the story. Like, it never cuts away. Like, all the information you're getting is through your main character, your main character only. In this instance, this particular story with her, it's like you get secondhand information from the people she's talking to. It don't cut away to like a scene where like a reenactment of something that happened. It cuts back to her like, oh, so that's what happened. So it's like all the information is very restrictive. Like whatever, you know, whoever she's talking to is telling her, is like, that's like our revelation through her. When, for instance, when they tell her what, oh, you know, Eddie's dead. And it's right, and we're kind of like, what? You know? You're like, we didn't see it. Like, us, the audience, did not see how it happened. We just have to take, you know, the information at face value.
Yeah.
So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So the movie, like the final act is Gene and Terry go into the city to find Cal because they think something's wrong. They're in a nightclub. There's a shootout. They get separated and then ultimately get a call from Cal to meet them at a diner. They regroup. And as they're headed back to the cabin in the woods, there's a car chase, an accident, and finally Jean pulls her shit together and defends herself against the bad guys and ends up helping Terry and Cal and herself get away from everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got to help her new family, you know. Yeah. And the thing, I guess, we don't know much about her. Like, we don't know if she has sisters or brothers. Is she the only child? Do she know anything about family? Or, you know, like, the husband is the only family she have or had, you know? So it's very ambiguous, like, far it's like her backstory. But I guess at this point in this particular movie, is like, we really don't need to know, because it's all about what she's evolving to be outside of her husband.
In one of the early scenes, when she first meets Cal, she says that she can go to her sister, and Cal says, no, you can't, because they'll find you there. So we do hear that she has a sister. But we don't hear anything else beyond that. We just know that she's in hiding or the bad people will get her.
Yeah, as far as we know, they probably killed all her family at this point. found them and slaughtered them all, trying to look for Terry.
For her. And yep.
Now, whose baby was this again?
We never find out whose baby it is. We just know that her husband took it from someone.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because then I was wondering, like, well, is it the boss's baby? And they look at it like, but then that was shot down in like later scenes. Because, you know, they wasn't saying, where's the baby? They were just like, where is Eddie?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the story. So I did watch this right after I watched I Am Woman. Mm-hmm. And both of them take place in the 70s. It was definitely like the three types of women that you might meet in the 70s were portrayed between I Am Woman and I'm Your Woman, in that you have Helen, who's out there with a career writing music, performing music, and really writing the anthem for women taking control of their lives. You have Jean, who is sitting back and playing the old school traditional housewife. And then Terry, who is a little bit in between, in that she's like women today, where she's trying to have a career and raise the family on her own. And I think it was, you know, watching those two movies back to back was fascinating.
That's a really good breakdown. Like I said, I definitely circle back with you after I watch I Am Woman. I'm excited to watch that though.
In this movie, I wish the movie had been told from Terry's perspective, mm-hmm. Who was the Black woman played by Marcia Stephanie Blake. I felt her character way more appealing. And maybe it's just like generationally how I was raised. I relate more to her character than I related to Jean. Mm-hmm. Jean, I was like, oh my, I just wanted to slap her. I just like, come on, stop just doing what everyone's telling you to take fucking control of your life.
Well, we see it at the, you know, that was her arc. And at the end, you know, she's taking control. Yeah, you know, hey, you know, Clark Kent had to figure out how to wear the cape, you know, so.
Right. And so there's a little boy in the movie, and at the very end, Jean starts to look back at the cabin, and he has like the ultimate line in the movie that really speaks to her arc. And it's, you can't look back. You told me you can't look back. And so she's like, yep. Yeah. Gotta move forward.
Yeah,
and then they off into the sunset.
Yeah, that was an awesome piece of dialogue. I definitely give him that one. That was good. That was yes, as you get paid big bucks to get those lines in, you know. like you said, it's all about, you know, kind of like the the transformation, self-discovery, you know, tapping into your inner strength, and you know.
Right. And in Julia Hart's other movie, Fast Color, we see that with that character as well. Mm. It's discovering who you are and moving forward and not being stuck in the past. Mm-hmm. So she definitely has a theme going with her movies that she both writes and directs.
Yeah, definitely. They're definitely three-dimensional. I mean, they're definitely not, you know, kind of cookie cutter, you know, characters, right? You know, definitely have, you know, depth and things for, you know, her characters to work to, far as, you know, being better people and things like that. So.
Yeah. So our a review is sit on the sofa, have a drink, enjoy the movie, put on your shoes, do something else like clean the house or go outside and just get destroyed by the mobs.
Oh yeah, and when you said destroyed, and we're recording this doing the Boulder, Colorado grocery store shooting that happened. So, you know,
for people not wearing masks. Okay, supposedly.
Oh, okay. I didn't really get all the deets on that one. I didn't hear about that, but yeah. So like, heart goes out to anyone that lost their lives doing that ordeal, and, you know, and definitely wear your mask. for me, it's it did not. I'm not trying to be biased, but of course, like, yeah, if you have three black women, of course, I'm going to like be a little biased towards that one. But I mean, it's definitely not, to me, it wasn't as strong as her previous cast of Ass Color. But I mean, like I said, there were like those sequences, like the disco shootout was well crafted. It was some suspenseful scenes. And yeah, I was on the same boat with you with the main character for a little while, but then I started, you know, to get like why at the beginning she's like that. So she have to kind of come out of her shell and really like knuckle up and like be the person she's supposed to be, like, you know. And yeah, at the end we seen that. I'm a sucker for good arcs, and you know, yeah, she did a good turnaround, and like I said, the supporting characters are really great. I mean, it could have been, I don't know, it could have been a tad shorter. But overall, like for me, the positives just edged out the negatives on this one. So yeah, I give it a sit down.
For me, it's I'd rather go clean the house, put on my shoes and clean the house. There's way too many scenes with just her and the baby. just like quiet. I think there's only like really three songs played in the entire movie. There's Bobby Gentry. There's a song that she sings to the baby that then they start to play. And then at the end, I think there's an Aretha Franklin song.
So you wanted a soundtrack.
It was way too many, like, very long scenes with just quiet with her and the baby, which started to feel tedious. Like I said, I didn't relate to the characters. So I know you don't have to relate to a character to enjoy a movie, but it was just, I didn't like her. And so because of that, I had a problem getting into the movie.
Gotcha. That's understandable. Yeah. I think she's written to be that way, like, I felt the same way. I definitely, like, I'm on the same boat with you. Like the first half of the movie, I'm like, what is she doing? But then I think about it, like, well, this is her first time, you know, being a mother. And so I was like, okay, I have a little bit of patience with her with this one, but she need to get her shit together.
So beyond my other favorite line in the movie, beyond the boys saying you can't look back, was they get pulled over by a cop and she goes, this is my husband and this is our baby. And then like they get back in the car and he goes, I had a white baby.
That was pretty funny. Yeah, like I said, it's some good writing in it. No doubt about that. There are some, you know, good, you know, there's some watchable scenes and stuff like that. But yeah.
Yeah, and like you said, the nightclub scene is very good. The set design is fantastic. The clothing, like, you really do feel like you're in the 70s. It's just not my cup of tea for the type of movie, but put on your shoes, clean the house type of thing.
Right on. Cool. So there you have it. I'm Your Woman. That's on Amazon Prime. You can watch it for free if you have an Amazon account. If you don't, I guess you can rent it somewhere. I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure you can if you don't have Amazon. Yeah. All right, guys. So we'll see you Thursday with a historical woman that you guys will dig. Until Thursday, we wish y'all safe physical distancing and
get your vaccine and keep wearing those masks.
Yes. Peace.